Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun.
He hates when I do it.
I hate it. It is a Sopranos podcast where Vince and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and break it down. You know, we just like to get in just every nook
just
and cranny.
Tenderize, mm-hmm. Like a fine meat.
Yeah, we like to tenderize
lemon
that meat.
Juice.
Hell yeah, dude. And today our guest is, if you are a listener of our normal podcast, The Film Drunk Broadcast, you know him, you love him, it's Justin Halpern.
Hey guys.
How you
hey.
Doing?
I'm very excited to be on your other podcast.
You didn't even give any of his credits, though.
You know,
he did. He said I had been a guest on the other podcast.
On the one important credit.
Yeah. That's a big credit. Also, yeah. you know him, you love him.
Yeah.
Okay.
I felt represented. There was no part of me that felt like I wasn't properly introduced.
You felt seen.
I did. I felt seen.
I see you, dude.
But you gotta like list as TV bona fides. We're not just some fly by night podcast. We get like people that are actually, you know, producing shows and shit.
All right, but I don't want to fuck it up because I introduced Neil Brennan at a comedy show last week, and I introed him as a writer for the Chappelle Show. And
co-creator.
He went up and just said, creator of the Chappelle Show. And I felt like a jerk. Yeah. So I don't want to like fuck this up, but
I also co-created the Chappelle Show.
You know him from the Chappelle Show. You know him as a creator of so many TV shows. We got Roseanne, Sopranos. The creator of the Sopranos is here. All sorts of shows, dude. I'm not gonna list
Shit
them.
My Dad Says,
Shit My
Surviving
Dad Says,
Jack,
Surviving Jack,
and the upcoming
Harley Quinn animated.
There
show.
You go.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I can't do credits because I freak out, and then I just say
you,
Roseanne.
How about this is your job to play the theme song?
All right. Pod. Pod. Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast.
Yeah, a theme song has to get everybody in the mood.
Yeah. It gets people pumped.
How am I going to get that out of my head?
So this is episode 7, Down Neck. It aired February 21st, 1999.
Mm-hmm.
February 21st, actually my birthday. Don't use that to steal my identity.
We're halfway there.
After stealing the sacramental wine from the school chapel, Anthony Jr. is suspended. Tony is concerned that his bad influence is responsible for his son's behavior and has a series of disturbing flashbacks in which he remembers learning that his own father was in the mob.
Yeah. Let's start, I think, with the Wayback Machine, because I want to know what was going on February 21st.
What was happening back then?
1999.
Yeah. Well, it was Roger Clemens' first workout with the Yankees.
Okay.
They were the defending World Series champs, and he just, you know, got on his little mound, throwing his little balls. Posh Spice and David Beckham had just decided to name their child Brooklyn after the place where he was conceived.
Oh, gross.
She was 24 and he was 23 at the time.
Damn, really?
I did not realize they were so young at the time.
They were babies.
Yeah. Gene Siskel had died the previous day. The headline was that Gene Siskel was dead at 53, complications from his second brain cancer surgery.
Damn, R.I.P.
His final film review was the Freddie Prinze Jr. romantic comedy She's All That.
What did he think?
Which it's
he
not gave a bad one to go out on.
He gave a favorable review. Do you want me to, you want to read some of that?
Sure.
Our flick of the week is She's All That, a high school drama that accurately reflects the intense pressures that 17-year-olds feel about their senior prom, from whom they are going with to what directions their lives will take afterward. The extra gimmick here is a makeover bet that the studly prom king hopeful, Freddie Prinze Jr., mm-hmm. makes with his friends. He claims he can transform a geeky artistic girl, Rachel Lee Cook, into the prom queen.
Yeah.
I think that movie like started the makeover trope in...
Oh, I think it was...
You think it was before that?
No, because
Can't Buy Me Love
was basically a bet, except it was the reverse.
Right, it was Patrick Dempsey being unnerded.
Yeah, you know what that girl's name was in that movie?
What?
Jennifer Mancini.
Whoa. Really?
Yep.
I think it was Jennifer. Her last name was Mancini.
Yeah, Mancini is all over film history.
I mean, other than The Godfather? I don't think so.
Well, that's two.
Yeah, that's
two. And then Henry Mancini.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrote the Pink Panther.
Name one character in film history with the last name Lieb. You can't.
Yeah, they probably changed it to like...
Yeah, I know.
Something.
I bet there's an accountant in some movie that's named Lieb.
There probably is. And you know what? If someone could point that out, just send an email to frogcast@gmail.com. I want to know the one character named Lieb. Vince gets all the characters.
Speaking of names, most popular boys' names in 1999, Jacob, Michael, Matthew, Joshua, Nicholas, Christopher, Andrew. For girls, Hannah,
man,
Alexis, Sarah, Samantha, Ashley, Madison, and Taylor.
Ashley Madison.
Yeah, there you go. Shit. Right next to each other. And then, so also there was a lot of headlines from the New York Post. They were really mean to Monica Lewinsky, not surprisingly.
Yeah.
So that's one of like the big time capsule moments, I think, where you really see the difference in eras is how Monica Lewinsky was treated.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So there was two headlines. She actually appeared on Barbara Walters. The two headlines, Perky Monica Unzips Her Lips for Baba.
Jesus and Christ.
Then, and this next one's even worse. Monica Blows Into Town for Walters Chat.
God damn.
Let me read some of that. A perky Monica Lewinsky hunkered down with Barbara Walters yesterday for her first TV interview.
Hunkered down? Like, they're doing all sorts of fat-shaming, slut-shaming.
Also, these are just, like, such, like, blatant puns. It's like, Monica on Walters doesn't suck dick. It's like, they're not even trying to.
It's the Post.
Yeah.
The Sexgate siren wore her standard New York garb, a black dress hidden behind a black trench coat and a Yankees cap, but she had a California attitude, sources said.
What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know. She was real perky. She looked pretty good, said one stagehand. You can't even name the stagehand. It's great. She was smiling. She seemed in a real good mood. And then here's another great sentence. The chunky former intern ate lunch.
Oh my God.
Fucking A, these people.
Coffee and Danish for breakfast and a turkey sandwich for lunch.
They just listed what she ate?
Yep.
Meh.
So, unsurprisingly, there was no cum. I'm sorry. I mean,
like, she wore a dress that didn't even have cum on it.
Yeah, really, back in the day, we just, not even that far back in the day.
No.
We just decided that this blatant case of workplace harassment was her fault.
Yeah, where the president had an intern blow him and we blamed the intern.
We victim blamed and slut shamed at the same time.
Yeah, the intern.
Damn, dude.
Instead of the president of the United States.
It was also the debut of Office Space. Weekend debut opened in 8th place, earned $4.2 million. Payback was the number one movie. Top pop song was Angel of Mine by Monica. And the top rock song was Heavy by Collective Soul.
This feels like it would be in like a scene at the Bing, you know?
Yeah, oh, for sure. This is very 90s.
This is...
I didn't even know that Collective Soul had another hit.
What was the other hit? Yeah. That is a good song. Yeah.
Whoa.
Heaven, let your light shine down. So we're going to let our heaven... We're going to let our light shine down. Whatever.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
I tried.
Speaking of heaven, which I think was the segue you were trying to make... this episode, Down Neck, opens up with AJ, Anthony Jr., stealing the sacramental wine with his buddies and getting drunk and vomiting, which is kind of, in terms of Bada B stories, leads us into, I think, this entire episode. Because this is like one of the few episodes that kind of sticks with like a single storyline, at least for the most part. Mm-hmm. So in terms of Bada B stories, we'll get into it. Also, we need a bumper for Bada B stories. AJ steals the sacrament. Tony is worried that he is adversely influencing his son. AJ is forced to visit Olivia Soprano in her nursing home, mm-hmm. and accidentally reveals that Tony is going into therapy.
Yeah. A little bit of trivia about this episode. It's the only episode of The Sopranos directed by a woman.
Really?
Which is, you said, I saw somebody said that to us on Twitter, and that's insane. And just also such a, again, of an era that really didn't end that long ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where no one cared if you ever had anyone but a white dude behind the camera in front of it. Well, didn't matter.
No one was IMDb-ing the episode to see. Like, the director of a Sopranos episode was not a thing that anyone was paying attention to.
No, and it's really, it's crazy too, because like I remember when I first started in the TV business and I was on writing staffs, I was on a staff one time that was 14 dudes and one woman.
Uh-huh.
And the show was...
How many of them went to Harvard?
Two of the 14. The show was terrible, but like, also, your show's going to be terrible if your writing staff is 14 dudes and one woman. Like,
right,
yeah.
It's all going to sound the same and be shitty. It's sort of like how you really shouldn't count baseball stats when they happened before black players were in the league.
Exactly.
Like, TV shows could have been so much better so much earlier if they had just made an effort to have other people in the writer's room. Because you can see, it's not just TV shows should be diverse because you should be, it's like, also, the show is way better when you have different people in a writer's room.
Like, oh, no one knew how to write for that character.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I think it's such a sign of the times, those times, that this was the only Sopranos episode directed by a woman. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. And other trivia, it was Michael B. Jordan has a cameo.
I know.
I think it's his first acting credit.
Really?
Yeah, he tells...
He plays Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
Right. Young Apollo Creed. Yeah. No, he actually yells at young Tony for dropping his candy wrapper.
For littering. Yeah.
I didn't even realize. I didn't recognize him.
Yeah. I didn't recognize him at first either until I looked at the credits for the episode.
Yeah, I saw and I was like, first it was that character, then it was Wallace. And then it was fucking history from there.
I bet you anything that he got Wallace off of a casting director of The Sopranos seeing him for that role. Like, HBO was notorious for kind of like recasting a lot of the people.
Yeah, over and over again. Yeah, sometimes, that's a good thing. And sometimes, I mean, how many times can we see Jeffrey Wright in a show? Like, he's fine.
I could see him a lot.
He's fine. But after a while, I just like...
I mean, he's one of our greatest eyelid actors.
He's a guy. He is a great
him actor. and what's his name from Homeland? Mandy Patinkin.
Oh,
yeah. World's greatest eyelid actor. I have a great Jeffrey Wright story that I cannot tell on the air. But when we get off the air,
damn it!
When we get off the air, I'll tell it.
Fair enough.
Well, that's a tease for us, not you, the listener. I'm happy about it. So
it was directed by Lorraine Senna. Who, like you said, is the only female director that the Sopranos ever had.
Right. And I feel bad for her because one of the things that stuck out at me about this episode is that it feels poorly put together in a lot of ways. It feels like this episode was good on paper and then like a lot of things happened. Like, you realize that scene where Tony and his team of delinquents steal the sacramental wine.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good storyline, but then you watch it play out and you realize that you have to have, like, child actors to pull it off.
Yeah.
Child actors, like, having done a couple shows with kids, it's really, really, like, it's sort of one of those things where, like, you have to really want to tell a story with kids to do it, because you're like, is this worth it? Because they're always... They just, it's
they're
like,
kids.
It's like, would you ask a 15-year-old to play in the major leagues? They'd be really bad, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing as like you're asking them to be in like the major leagues of television and they can't like hold their own. Like, that throw up scene, in theory, yeah, that's a great scene. Mm-hmm.
Except, you can imagine reading that and be like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, except it played like a bad episode of like Family Matters.
Yeah, Seventh Heaven or some shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I talked to you guys about this like a couple weeks ago after I saw that movie Little, which like it was big in reverse.
Right.
Which like sounds good on paper if you don't think about it for more than 5 minutes until you realize that you have to replace Regina Hall with a young kid for the entire movie.
Right.
And then she has to be like, this 13-year-old has to be the main character of the movie. And like, imagine if you replace Tom Hanks in Big, but instead of like Tom Hanks just disappeared for most of the movie and then a little kid had to pretend to be Tom Hanks all the time.
Yeah.
That's not going to work out well.
Yeah, no. Unless you got Colin Hanks.
Sure.
I mean, that guy is almost as
can
good as
do
Tom.
No wrong.
He or can't. Chet Hanks.
Or Chet. Oh, I would love to see him.
Just rapping all the lines.
Just
The thing that struck me about this episode specifically was that it was the, like, a lot of times in when we're working on something, we'll think, like, is this a network story or is this a cable kind of story?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, a network story, usually when we say that, it means, like, it's got a very, like, clear narrative that doesn't have a lot of subtext to it, and you kind of have to, like, hit the viewer over the head with the like metaphor.
Like,
you know?
The viewer's there for that episode and they might have never seen the show before.
Right. And like you can feel the network notes being like, are they going to understand who that is? Mm-hmm. Are they going to understand this? Are they going to understand that? And I remember the first moment that dawned on me watching this episode is when he's laying in bed and he's having that conversation with Carmela and we're seeing those like sharp cut-ins of Meadow.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need those.
Right.
If you're even halfway intelligent, you know what his dilemma is. You watched the previous episode.
Yeah.
And he's kind of referencing it. You get what he's saying through what he's saying.
It's the only time I think I've ever seen them try to do that kind of flashback before.
They don't really do it after
They try to stylize it. Maybe they hadn't invented the previously on yet. Maybe that was like a new invention like a season later. But they did not need to show that conversation again, especially stylized. It was
it was weird. And also you have James Gandolfini, who is an incredible actor, who definitely can pull off like how he's feeling without having to make those cuts. And it was one of the only episodes of the show where I was like, this feels like it got noted, even though I'm sure it didn't, but because I don't think David Chase was like taking notes and HBO wasn't, but it felt like that.
They're not quite confident in their place as like a prestige TV. Like, they're not confident that people have seen the previous episodes yet.
Yeah, and I think back then, you know, that was a concern. It's like, maybe this is the first time somebody's tuning in to The Sopranos,
right?
You know, and so because of TV watching habits were so different back then, that was probably something that they kind of like felt like, well, fuck, people aren't going to know what's going on if we don't do this,
right? Yeah, so
even so, it was implied in the scene. They did not need to show it. It was a strange episode. It's also the only time I've ever seen, I think, an entire episode be half flashback, which I'm thankful they never did that again. Because once again, you have to deal with child actors.
Yeah.
And that kid, apparently, who played young Tony Soprano.
Bobby Borriello.
Yes.
No credits after 2004.
Do you know what his other two credits are? He was young Howard Stern in Private Parts.
Yeah. No shit.
Yeah, and he was young Andy Kaufman in Man on the Moon. He plays a lot of young, famous person.
Right.
That's his
young
bag.
Young Jews and young
He's
Italians.
He's young like Russell Crowe.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. He has those like teeth where, you know, when you get the adult teeth and you've just gotten them.
But you still have a little kid mouth.
Yeah. I had that real bad.
Oh, yeah?
Until I was like 14, probably. Mm.
And then you beefed out, dude.
Yeah.
Look at your face now. Perfectly
now
symmetrical.
Now my head seems small.
No.
Yeah, it's still a big head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then so the plot is they steal the wine and then the school thinks that AJ has ADD. And I was really excited about this being an AJ episode because I love the AJ character, but I feel like this episode soft pedals who AJ is because before this, we really get the idea that AJ is the scumbag kid who fucking loves nu metal.
Right.
And you know, play. I mean, I guess you get a little bit of video games in this.
But he was a great kid character.
Yeah.
He was really an outstanding, and that was the thing, I think, where Sopranos excelled where other shows had never done before, was like they weren't afraid of anyone, even the kids, looking like scumbags.
Right. Yeah, and yeah. I think of what you're saying about this being the show being like noted to death, like the and being more networky than other Sopranos shows. Like in previous shows, he'd be wearing like a Avenged Sevenfold T-shirt or something,
mm-hmm.
and then this one he just looks like little kid out of studio casting kind of
right.
thing.
Yeah.
And he's just wearing like normal shirts, and he's got the like you don't know that he's the proto new metalhead kid who's gonna eventually like get into
yeah, but
niche.
You get the idea that he's a little scumbag. I mean, it opens a with little, him yeah. stealing the sacrament. Like, that's,
yeah.
you know that he's obviously breaking rules, and he's also, you know, they were true to his character. In the scene where he is being evaluated by a psychologist, and he has to name what he sees in the picture, and he looks at a horse, and then he just starts, you know, he's like, you mean because there's no guy? You mean because maybe the guy's going out and getting food for the horse? And then he just out of nowhere mentioned South Park episode 1. And,
right, yeah.
Which is like, of kids of that era, that is literally, you talk to them for 3 minutes, they're eventually going to talk about South Park episode 1 where Cartman gets an anal probe.
Right. And then there's the whole ADD plotline, and that was very... like ripped from the headlines of the day.
I feel definitely. Like. I would have to say that we have to open with our sting for It's the 90s because this has got a lot of 90s references.
Yes.
It's the 90s. Parents are supposed to discuss sex with their children. It's the 90s. It's the 90s.
So what we have in this episode in terms of 90s references, number one, we've got ADD. Which mm-hmm. is everywhere. I had ADD.
Me too. I was in the school psychologist just like AJ.
Yeah. Samesies. What about you? ADD kid?
No.
Really?
No. I didn't like talk a lot. nobody.
This is why you only got into writing and not stand up comedy, apparently.
Yeah. I didn't catch the bug.
Yeah.
No, nobody thought I had ADD. People just were like, you look weird.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like, I think a lot of ADD kids like me and probably you too, were just kids who were confused about the difference between positive and negative attention.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the one thing I noticed, that anyone who was just like negative attention, positive attention, the point is people are looking at me, like those kids a lot of the times were just medicated.
Yeah.
And I feel like I was one of those kids who was medicated for that very issue.
They told me to be on the medication. And I didn't start until I was like in my 20s.
That medication was at the time was being thrown around for everything. Because I remember I had like this weird, like twitchy, like leg, like restless leg thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were trying to give me ADD medication for it. My dad, who was a researcher, was like, no, what do you, what, yeah. Like, yeah. For what? What does it do? Like, no, for restless leg? Like,
yeah, for a fidget.
Like, get fucked. He's
it's
not
like they all had their new toy that they wanted to play with.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, let's try this one out. So remind me, I was thinking about this the other day. How often were you allowed to celebrate birthdays in your family? I remember you saying like your dad only didn't give you a birthday party every year.
No, we didn't have a birthday party every year. What we would usually like, I remember 3 birthday celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I had one when I was 5, and then I had another one when I was 10. and then I had another one when I was 13,
mm-hmm.
and then that's it.
Was like, it a bar mitzvah?
No,
So, oh, okay. I thought maybe because that wouldn't count.
And the one when I was 5, I remember explicitly that it happened because my mom was like, "He's 5." and I think partly it was like it wasn't my dad trying to be like punitive. I think it was just he was just like. What's the purpose of doing that?
Yeah.
He's
a big boy now. Every year you're just a bigger boy, but he can just say that excuse.
Like I would get, they would buy me something usually,
but
just wouldn't have a
celebration.
No, I wouldn't have a celebration.
You wouldn't have the people over for like the bouncy house kind of thing that they do now.
No. Oh my God. Yeah. Like I have 2 kids. We fucking break our backs throwing birthday parties for these kids every single year that they have a birthday.
Yeah.
And they like come to expect it, and I just want to be like, I never had that.
Yeah,
I never had anything that you're having. You went to a trampoline park.
Oh yeah, no, my girlfriend's son turned 6 this past weekend. Did like the whole trampoline park.
Did you go to Sky Zone?
No, it was in Fresno. But yeah, but the, we went to the version of that.
Yeah, Fresno. The Fresno and Sky
like,
Zone. Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, this is amazing. They did not have this when I, like, it's cool to me now.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get many birthday parties. I thought you were saying no presents or anything like that. I mean,
no, my parents would always get me something.
They got you something. Yeah. That's nice.
And then they'd give my brother $5 to go get me something. Nice. And he would always get me something that was under 50 cents.
Because he's smart. Yeah. He knows
which
how
is
to do it.
An AJ move.
Oh, totally.
Like, that's definitely like when AJ buys his mom like a DVD of The Matrix.
Yeah.
I have a clip of him getting diagnosed with ADD here.
Oh, go ahead.
In many respects, Anthony is a normal, healthy eighth grader. Sister Patricia, his art teacher, thinks he shows strong skills and spatial orientation. But the thing is, though, and it's not just this one incident, Anthony sometimes has trouble following the rules, weighing consequences. At times, doesn't think before he acts. And it's thought that there's a good possibility Anthony could be ADD.
ADD.
I'm sorry, attention deficit disorder.
I knew it. I always knew there was something.
Well, what is it?
It's an aggregate of symptoms. Inattention, impulsivity, sometimes, although not always, hyperactivity. Of course, to be sure, we'll need to give him a thorough evaluation.
All he needs is a whack upside the head.
If he's got an illness, it's an illness, right? You'd hit somebody who's sick? You'd hit somebody with polio?
Yeah. I was just as kid. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying is like, I think Edie Falco didn't get the level of credit she deserved show because this episode, particularly a few of the beginning, like she carried a lot of these early episodes because what he was doing was great, but also you'd seen a version of it, right? Like we'd seen enough mob movies,
right,
and The Godfather and like good portrayals of the mob that like we understood the universe that character lived in, and this was definitely a different take and he was amazing at it, but you never really saw anybody do what Edie Falco was doing in the way that character was written.
Yeah.
And especially in this episode, and that scene in particular, when I was watching it, it was like, she's a concerned, put upon mom and wife who like consistently goes to the line with her husband, but like you can feel the character knowing there's a line she can't cross with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the level of skill that she has as an actress in this show is fucking amazing.
Yeah, like she has to be, she's sort of the new age, like she's trying to be a modern mom,
mm-hmm.
but she's also, you know, she's still a Jersey chick who married like a mobster, and like the way that she balances those two things is amazing, and she does it like throughout the entire show.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that scene with her is that she starts off as soon as he gives the diagnosis. It's, I knew it. It's this idea that, because, and this recurs throughout the series, that like, there's got to be something medically wrong with everyone in her family, whether it's genetics or just some sort of learning disorder, because like she herself has, she puts a lot of emphasis on genetics, and she complains about the fact that every time AJ is sad or whatnot, that this is just some soprano gene that
well it's this like total inability, and it was the character, this total inability to face the reality of the life that she's chosen,
exactly, and the situation her kids are in, like this idea, like I knew it had to be medical, it has nothing to do with the fact that my husband is the literal head of the New Jersey mafia.
Yeah.
and I love the ADD diagnosis scene, because I remember like doing those sort of tests
I
was around that age, where they'd be like, do you ever fidget? Are you ever like impulsive?
I cry.
Do you ever talk out of turn? And I was like, well, yeah. Like, doesn't everybody do that? Like,
I cried during mine.
Yeah.
Because they just kept pushing on the things that I did. And I didn't know if I did all of them, but I knew I did something wrong. And just at some point, I started crying. And they're like, he's got it. He's got the ADD.
Yeah.
I was like,
we broke it. He's got it.
Exactly.
And I didn't get the ADD meds, but about like 5 years before that, like I had an asthma attack when I was like 5.
Yeah.
You know, because I grew up in Fresno, where the air's bad. And
right.
They gave kids these things called Theodore Sprinkles, which I guess similar to ADD, they don't like they got a lawsuit and they don't give it to kids anymore.
Theodore Sprinkles?
Like, it's basically like speed. Like they were just doling out speed
they called
to little
it
kids.
Theodore Sprinkles, though?
Yeah, yep, yep.
Was that the street name or was
it? it was Teddy Sprinkles.
Is it Pfizer?
And it's actually named after the guy who invented it, Dr.
Sprinkles. Dr. Thank Theodore you very much.
Sprinkles.
His name was actually Stephen Sprinkles.
He wanted this to sound more upscale.
Then
so when you're talking about mob, another thing that I noticed, like in one of the first scenes, we get very little Christopher in this episode.
Right.
But we do get a snippet at the beginning where he has to show up to his no-show construction job, and I feel like The Sopranos showed the sort of the way that the mob actually works in a much like deeper, much more specific way than any other mob thing.
Yeah,
ever
it
done.
Was not afraid to show the like mundane nature of many aspects of the mob. Just like The Wire would always show police work and people like filling out paperwork and sort of the day to day, non exciting. And that became kind of like the stew in which the show lived, and you liked it once you were in it.
Yeah,
the Sopranos was so good at that. It's just like
filled with the ticky tack little paydays that they were all involved. I have
like when he steals the bracelets,
right?
And he brings them in.
Yeah,
he's like, I stole these off a FedEx truck just because he could.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I got the scene where they've shut down. They've used their union to like shut down this construction site in order to get a kickback, which actually like I watched it the first time and I didn't understand what was happening.
Right.
And I usually watch these episodes like twice before we do the show. And I finally understood what was happening in the second time I watched it. But I got that clip.
You're doing an excellent job. Allow yourself to take pleasure in that.
Guy's been ragging in my fucking ear all day. I'd like to kill the prick. You hear that, prick?
Get him the hell out of here.
Is there a problem?
Look, you made your point, okay?
I made my point.
You made your point.
What point is that?
Enough with this work stoppage.
This is a union safety official, and he stays until the union deems this workplace is free of hazard.
I have the money.
You do? Well, Christopher, give the union a call and see if this gentleman here has paid up his union dues, and then pop on these wheel covers. We'll check the brake pads.
I'll get right on it.
I still don't understand the thing with the brake pads, but I get the rest of it.
That was just like the cover.
Sure.
Right, exactly. My guess is that the brake pads, saying that like he's the union safety inspector, right? And he will not pass them on a safety inspection until they get the money, which means he won't even look at the brake pads until he gets the money. That's my guess. It was either that or it was a threat. And I'm not sure.
No. I think it was the former. Yeah. It's just like so much of this, like these like lame shakedowns,
right?
You know, that it had never really been done before.
Right.
Like you hadn't really ever seen that version of it.
Yeah, but it was like, always cool. All mob movies had shakedowns that were just awesome, like just beating the shit out of someone for some money. And like there would be violence
involved. Which is usually what it is, I think. Like usually it's more just like...
Yeah, no, but it is going, making your rounds to the different people that you are, you know, offering, quote, protection to. Mm-hmm. And just like, thanks for my envelope, and on to the next one. Yeah. Everyone hated doing pickups on the show because it was the most boring part of the job.
Yeah.
The only thing they liked is when someone was light with an envelope, then they got to be violent.
But I like in this one that Tony uses his job interview voice for like this part. You know, like,
does he?
Yeah, oh, very much.
I'll get your money, okay?
We shall return.
Oh,
hallelujah.
I mean, the part with the brake pads is like, this gentleman is a union official.
Yeah, we shall return.
It's like his voice when he's like, oh, no, this is just an unfair stereotype of Italian American.
The other thing I really liked about it, because this idea of a mob boss not wanting his kid to sort of turn out the way that he did, I mean, that's like, that's from, you know, the tale as old as time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is the thesis statement of The Godfather, you know?
Right.
But the thing that I liked about this episode that I did think was a twist on it was like it wasn't so much Tony worried about him getting into the mafia, you know, it became more about Tony just worrying about having a piece of shit kid.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Oh, and like in most mafia movies, the idea is that you don't want your kid to grow up into a life of crime. In The Sopranos, it's a little bit more complex because it's all the growing pains of when you move up in social class.
Right.
It's like, you know, Tony's got this sort of working class upbringing, and now he's raising his kid like in a rich suburb right. around rich people who he doesn't really understand,
right.
and he's raising these kids that are kind of growing up around spoiled rich kids,
right,
which has like a whole separate series of problems.
Right, like the resentment that he has for his kid is not just that like, oh, in my day we did things different, but he's like he's raising like a sissy. He's raising a little complainy, fucking just fat, douchey kid.
He's
got
to see a psychologist at the school.
It's like all the things that he thinks are weak.
Yeah, exactly. Which just makes me love their interactions more and more because he wants to be sweet with him, but he also is just barely always on the edge of violence with him.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, if I could just beat the shit out of him, then he would finally be tough.
And
that's the one thing he just wants and he just never gets on the show.
It's The Sopranos, I think, like, largely was kind of an examination of weakness.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, what it is, what it looks like, the different forms of it. Like, is it a subjective thing or not? Like, because there's so many times, like, even just a mobster, the idea of a mobster going to a therapist, right? Like, Tony is like, is this weakness that I'm here? It's like the feelings that she gets out of him, like him feeling feelings, is that weakness? Is my kid, like, I love my kid, but I want to kick the shit out of him because they really dug in. I feel like the writers really like dug into the idea of like, we're not going to find a clean answer to this. It's going to constantly be this push and pull through the series. And that's why I think the kid characters in this show, especially AJ, are so alive in like a way that they just aren't in other shows.
You know?
Like that, because that's, as a parent, your kids, you can't help it. Your kids are constantly, you feel like they're a reflection of you.
Right.
You see them do things that, like the things that make me maddest that my kids do are things that I used to do. And that I hated about myself or I currently hate about myself.
Yeah.
And then I see them do it and I go fucking ballistic and I'm like, oh, I'm getting mad at myself.
You're trying to beat the weakness out of yourself.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s. And he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but
yes.
It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and then so the after the ADD, part of his AJ's punishment is to go hang out with Livia.
Yeah,
which is great because like she doesn't really want it either.
Yeah,
yeah. So the best grandma I think who's ever been on a TV show.
Oh yeah. Well, before we get into that, I want to get to just real quick the punishment that was doled out by Carmela,
yes,
at the dinner table.
And by the way, like, this is another example of where I think the direction of the show was kind of bad. Like, I don't like, they couldn't get a clean take of AJ being sad about this punishment.
So they
have these weird like cuts to the close-up of the tear, like two weird close-ups.
Yeah
Anyway,
well, it's a problem with child actors. But this was the punishment, which I related to wholeheartedly.
You are not to play Mario Kart or go skateboarding for 3 weeks. And no TV.
No.
And you are not going to sit on that internet either.
Like, in terms of a 90s punishment for a child, you can't get more, like, no. In that zone. I mean, number one, no Mario Kart, which already, like, do you think someone told Edie Falco, remember to pronounce it Mario? Or you think she just knew this is exactly how a New Jersey...
I bet you anything that she just... That was a choice she made.
Oh, I love it.
It's so good.
It's so good. And yeah. And then no skateboarding, no Mario Kart, and no...
Sitting around on that internet.
No being on that internet either. Just... Mwah. And also, no TV, which is the ultimate punishment as a child. Now, when I was a kid, we got bad grades. And they took the TVs out of our house. We didn't have TV.
That's a nuclear option.
Yeah. So from sixth grade from like fifth grade on to 11th grade, no TV in the house during the school year. And we got the TVs back September 11th, 2001. Because September 11th happened, they put the TVs back.
Like, I'm going to force you to watch this.
You have to see what we've done. No, and they put the TVs back in the house. And, you know, there was
You have this really fond memory of September 11th.
It was a pretty good day in the Lieb household.
One of the things I've realized as an adult is that all of the punishments that my... All of those kinds of punishments against me as a kid are just as much punishments for the parents.
Yeah.
Like, when you take away your kid's TV, it's like, oh, now you have to, like, talk to your kid and hang out with them.
Punishing your kid is the worst thing in the world. Because, like for instance, like the other day, my kid, we were having this back and forth. And I told him to put on his clothes like 20 fucking times, and then finally I was like, all right, well, we're not going to go out to lunch then. Like, I want to go out to lunch. And now I have to sit at home with my fucking kid who's like now pissed off and upset and was like really upset at me. And instead, it's way worse for me than it is for him.
And it's so transparent.
It literally does hurt you more than it hurts him.
Yes.
That's amazing.
And it's so transparent at that age that they just don't have the capacity to deal with disappointments. Yeah. So you'll be like, put on that shirt. And then they'll just start wailing because they'll just be like, I don't want to put on that. like just anything can set them off, and they're crying, and then they're like, okay, like 45 seconds later.
Yeah. What age are we talking?
That's my 6-year-old.
Yeah.
My 3-year-old is like literally anything. If he just gets in moods where he wants to be mad, and so you'll just be like, he'd be like, get dressed. And he's like, I don't want to get dressed. And I'll be like, okay. And he'll be like, I want to get dressed. Like, he just wants to get mad about something.
Yeah. So AJ goes to visit Olivia, and he reveals to her that Tony is going to see a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
And they have a weird back and forth that's almost like a Lonely Island sketch, because they just keep going back and forth, like over and over and over again. And and then she has a very good line in that, so I got a clip of that.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so, Ren. I'm kind of wiped.
Oh, you're a 13-year-old boy. You're too young to be so tired.
They sent me to a psychiatrist all morning. I took like a million tests.
A psychiatrist?
Yeah, you know, because I got suspended and everything.
They sent you to a psychiatrist?
Yeah.
But that's crazy. That's all nonsense. That's nothing but a racket for the Jews.
Dad goes.
He does not.
Yes, he does.
He does not.
Yes, he does.
To a psychiatrist?
Yeah.
He does not.
He does too.
But why do you say that? That's ridiculous.
Because it's true. I heard him and Mom talking about it.
What does he need a psychiatrist for?
Is it okay if I take that pair, Grandma?
So great.
That is that nobody landed conversations that old Italians have.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, half my family's Italian. I know you're Italian. Like, those are the most Italian conversations
She's my grandma. Just that weird broken record where you have to say the same thing like 17 times.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Yeah. No, it's true. No. A psychiatrist?
Yeah, your father would never. He did. He would. He did not. And by the way, every Italian parent, they're like, if you tell them you're in therapy, it's they take it so insanely personal. Like, well, I guess I just did everything I could, and I guess it wasn't enough.
Yeah. Oh, the martyr gene is always so strong with them.
I guess everything that I did for you wasn't enough.
Yeah.
You're like, no, I'm just going to therapy, because I'm working on some things. So everything that your father and I did, it wasn't enough.
Yeah. My other favorite, like, super Italian moment is when Tony's trying to imagine like a different life for himself or his kids, mm-hmm. and like the alternate existence that he comes up with. I'll play that for you. It's really good.
Do you think that's how your son feels about you?
Yeah, probably. And I'm glad. I'm glad if he's proud of me. But that's the bind I'm in, because I don't want him to be like me. He could be
Which is like the nut of the show.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Be anything he wants to be. He could be like this guy I know in high school. His grandfather invented these little ties that go on the end of salamis. He made millions of dollars. He's sitting on his ass.
That
he
is
could
also,
be anything. He could be like a salami millionaire.
That is the other super like clearly everyone on that writing staff knew lots and lots of Italians, because that is the most like every Italian's dream is to every Italian's dream is to invent something that takes almost no brain power to invent.
A food thing,
and then make millions from it.
Yeah, and not it's do like, anything after
and
that.
Sit
yeah,
on your
exactly.
Ass.
Yeah. He invented the casing for Mustachio, and now he's a millionaire. Like, that's like every fucking, like, every time I would go, all my Italian family lived in Joliet, mm-hmm. which is like a shithole right outside mm-hmm. of Chicago. And when we'd go visit them, they'd always be like, they would always do two things. One, they would like, praise me for how much I ate.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
God, I
and
love
they
that.
Would and they would complain about black people doing just normal things.
The exact things that they do.
Yeah, they'd be like, this Mungiani, he's walking down the street. It's like, what are you doing? I'm like, even at like 8 years old, I knew, I'm like, You just said somebody's walking down the street and you have a problem with this. Munjani goes to the store, he buys two things, he fucking leaves. You're like, what do you want him to do?
Yeah, that's why I was always like the prince to my grandma. Because like, however, anytime that she would offer me more food, I would take it and eat it. And I would be like the fucking king of the world.
Yeah, yeah. Be like, he is such, they say to my mom, they'd be like, Joni, he is such a good eater. I just, there's no, it's anything I put on his plate, he eats. That boy. Boy, he's gonna be something. It's like
that's the best thing you could ever be in your grandparents' eyes is a good eater.
Yeah, no,
and then
for sure.
So like the mafia is basically that salami dream applied somewhere else. It's
right.
Like their entire goal is to have these no-show jobs and just like sit at the bin.
Yeah,
all
sitting
day.
On your ass is like that is peak. If you can do that, then you're living your life correctly.
Yeah,
I would love to like see. Do a deep dive into the writing staff of The Sopranos because the one thing about that show that had never really been done because like previous to that I think like Oz was kind of the first thing to like break but Oz didn't have like a lot of humor to it, you know. There was a little bit here and there some dark stuff but like for the most part it didn't, but The Sopranos had tons of comedy tons of comedy in it. And it was one of the only shows. It was like with the first drama to really like do that, you know.
It was almost like a sitcom before it was a drama, really.
Right?
Yeah, like, and it has like really like skilled comedic beats in it. And I just like I wonder on that writing staff like who went on to like who either had worked in comedy or you know because it clearly somebody. I mean, it was a funny show.
I loved hearing my friends' stories of like living in Italy where like. Nothing works quite right because everybody like kind of half-asses their job and it's just an accepted thing. Where
right.
It's like here you're worried about getting your car towed and there it's just like, you parked there. Maybe probably it'll be fine.
Right.
And you're like, are you sure? And like, probably won't get a ticket. Nah, don't worry about it. You know? And then it's like, when's the bus going to show up? I don't know. The bus driver, he's off.
It'll be here when it's here.
Yeah.
I remember once when I was traveling in Europe, I was in, when I was like 20, I was backpacking and I was in Rome and it was the first time I'd been in Italy since I'd like visited, I had family in Italy, and I visited when I was like 3, but I didn't remember. So I was there back when I was 20 and I remember being super disappointed by the food, right? Like everywhere I went, I was like, this food is not, because I didn't have any money, so I couldn't go to like nice places, but I went to like, you know, regular places where if you went in the US, you'd probably get a decent meal.
Right.
And I said to this Italian guy we were traveling with, I was like, this food is shitty. And he's like, it's as good as it needs to be. and I was like, oh, yeah, he's right, because I have to buy it, and nobody, like, tries. Nobody has these, like, grand designs to, like, have a chain of really good restaurants, and, you know, they just is like, it's as good as it needs to be.
Right. You paid for it. You ate it.
Yeah, you eat it, you piece of shit.
There's probably, like, a different chef for, like, the tours. Like, he's not going to come back.
Yeah.
So a couple of gabavafangul.
A few.
Yeah, there was. What did you have?
Well, I have one. I have ubats.
Yeah. So we got an explanation from Stevie.
We
B.
got a Stevie B.
We
ubats?
Got we got an ubats.
Beautiful.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I'm Stevie B. And the Italian American slang word of the day is ubats. Ubats. I'm heading to the Sala Maria. To order a sandwich for lunch. As I'm walking down the street, I see down the block Donnie chasing after his wife Lucia. They're screaming at each other, carrying on right there in broad daylight. Right in broad daylight. The two of them, down the block Donnie and his wife, they're both ubats. Medigan. As I head to the delicatessen to order lunch on the boulevard, are down the block Donald and his wife. They are in a very heated, very loud, very public discussion. As I witness the action displayed in public, I realize that down the block Donald and his wife are both crazy. Ubats!
Thank you, Stevie B, for everything that you do. Is this channel endless? Because I really hope it is.
I looked up the two things that I heard in this episode, and he had both of them.
Oh, that's beautiful. What's the second one that you heard?
A Mameluke.
Ah.
Which has a rich etymological history. I believe it was like a slave, an Islamic slave in the time of the Moors.
Yeah, and later a really, really big dog.
A Marmaduke.
That's a Marmaduke joke, everyone.
Oh, I got it.
Thank you. You did great.
And I remember hearing Mama Luke growing up, and I was like, never really knew what it meant exactly.
Yeah.
That's why we got Stevie B.
Thank you, Stevie B. Let's do it.
How you doing? I'm Stevie B. The Italian American slang word of the day is Mama Luke. Mama Luke.
So Stevie B's sitting in what looks like his office, and he's got a framed picture of, I don't know if that's Tony Bennett or Louis Prima on the wall behind him, but he's got someone back there.
Medium Petey comes into my office, tells me he's been watching all reruns of Star Trek because it's good for little Petey. I go, good for little Petey? He goes, yeah. Tessie told me I should read the book Dr. Spock wrote on raising a kid. He goes, so I figure I just watch the Star Trek instead. Sometimes, Medium Petey, he's a real Mama Luke. American. My cousin Peter sat in my office and explained to me he's been watching a lot of reruns of Star Trek because it's good for his newborn son, Peter Jr. When I questioned this method, he tells me his wife, Teresa, told him he should read the book Dr. Spock wrote on rearing a child. He said to me, although I enjoy watching Star Trek, I don't know how it pertains to child rearing. Sometimes, Peter can be quite an idiot. Mama Luke.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I feel like, and tell me if I'm wrong, Italians have maybe 1,000 words for idiot.
Yeah.
Just like...
I mean, is that unique to them, though? So do we.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess so, but it feels like every other time we do Stevie B, it's just another way of calling some guy a fucking idiot.
Sure. Yeah. But I think what happens with words for idiots is, you know, it starts as a medical term, idiot, moron, retard, and then eventually we use it as an insult enough that they're like, well, this is insensitive.
We gotta
come up with a new one, and then that becomes an insult, and then the whole process starts over again.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I thought it was just like, you know, there's just a lot of idiots in Italy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just like the way Italians or Eskimos have 1,000 words for snow, you know.
And then we got malapropisms this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Only got one that I found.
Oh, I found two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I got the albatross.
Yeah. The albacore around my neck. Do you have a clip of that?
Oh, I do.
Gets up and we get a little cash flow going.
Oh, Mr. Cash Flow, big businessman now.
Well, what do you know about it? You're scared of your own shadow. Reno is growing by leaps and bounds, Livia. It's a chance to get in on the ground floor. After Rocco gets the book up, he's going to open a new supper club. He wants me to run it.
A supper club? Are you drunk?
Oh, per la Madonna, Jesus Christ, on my fucking albacore around my neck.
which is great, but also we've got genetical.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's when Tony is asking about the ADD. Mm-hmm.
It's genetical.
Yeah, maybe it's genetical, which is a big worry in the Soprano family, especially for Tony, that he's spreading his shitty genes to his kid.
Yeah. So two things about the albacore sequence.
Uh-huh.
Another example of a weird bad direction in this movie, or in this episode, it just felt like the ADR was pretty bad. Like a lot of it didn't match up in that scene.
I didn't notice
there's
that
another
one.
Scene where Tony's talking about Jefferson Airplane, and it's like an overhead shot, and his lips are clearly not moving.
Right.
And they clearly added it in later, maybe because they couldn't figure out which song they were going to use, and they didn't know which one they were going to get the rights to, so they had to put it in afterwards, I guess.
Huh.
It felt more poorly made than a lot of other episodes.
A lot of these early episodes have mistakes like that. There's, I think there's a bunch of modern cars in the scenes back in the 60s when they're kids, like parked in the background.
Mm-hmm.
There's like modern, like,
oh, really? I didn't
see that. it's not perfect.
Yeah.
But you know,
I mean, it's a lot of work for a flashback sequence.
It's a lot of work for a flashback sequence, especially for a show like that, where you have no idea whether or not anyone's going to like the show. Why put in 100% effort? You know, it's the Italian way. You got to go halfway with it. It just turned out that it was a worthy enterprise.
Yeah.
That's all.
And then my other thing was just trying to imagine if Tony's dad had moved to Reno, and what if like the Sopranos was set in Reno, and he was like the crime boss of Reno, Nevada.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting show too, especially given how shitty of a town Reno is. It's almost kind of like New Jersey in that same way.
Yeah.
But, like, is the crime boss of Reno any smaller than the crime boss of New Jersey? I don't know.
I think one of the things that I think the cultural effect of this show was, and why setting it in Reno might not have had that effect, is I think setting it in Reno or any like place like that makes it suddenly feel like it's like setting something on another planet, you know? Right. Like nobody lives in a place like that.
It's Beverly Hillbilly,
right. Yeah. And I think like one of the things that happened in this show that I think you see sometimes, like this also happened with like Wolf of Wall Street. Like I remember seeing a lot of people's reactions to Wolf of Wall Street be like, oh, that looks like an awesome life.
Yeah,
like,
right.
They
saw
Jordan Belfort and they were like,
That guy's cool.
Yeah. And the point of the movie was supposed to be like, what a pathetic like human being this is.
Right.
And I think with this, like you definitely started to see like dudes who were just like, you know, middle managers at like a company be like, and this fucking guy, like non-attack, like they just like yeah, I'll fucking take care of him, like saying shit like, you know, like everybody's 45-year-old dad who watched the show thought that they were in the Bada Bing,
right.
They like craved that like place, you know, and in reality it's like such a depressing, sad, lone, like they're in this shitty back room of a strip club,
a bunch of morbidly obese men playing
one
pool
table, like it just sucks so bad, and everybody who's every like dad whose life didn't go exactly how he wanted to, was watching that being like, fuck, that's the
cool
dream
guys. It's drinking, that show about the cool guys,
he's drinking grappa at 10 in the morning,
and it's like it's such a litmus test. I think
if you look at that and you go, oh, this is a show about just a bunch of dudes living the dream, then you don't really get the show, at least. But I mean, it speaks to the strength of the show that you can like the show either way. People can watch The Sopranos and think it's a bunch of cool guys, and it's still a good show to them. Let them believe that.
And one thing we haven't talked about with this episode is that the entire flashback sequence is basically the jumping off point for the Sopranos movie that they're making.
The prequel. Yeah,
they're making a young Tony played by James Gandolfini's son, who like is witnessing the riots in Newark, which they sort of reference in this episode.
Right.
And, you know, all the like Ed Sullivan stuff. And David Chase clearly has like a sort of a thing for that whole time period. He made that, I forget what it was called. He made a whole movie where it was like a kid.
So what
growing
is it,
up in
68, 69?
I think it's 67 because they mentioned
67.
The Democratic Convention at one point, right?
Was that in 67? That was 67.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
In Detroit where they had the riot.
It's not a series. It's just a movie.
It's just a movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting time period, you know, given, you know, the kind of the cultural forces that were behind the scenes happening. And yet this, you know.
Yeah. Newark riot 67 also.
67. Yeah. So and this neighborhood trying to like stay the same and kind of like keep that, you know. Because there's this whole kind of like anti-counterculture thing with a lot of like the Italian mafiosos. Mm-hmm. Like they hate hippies, but they never talk about it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm interested to see how that plays out just in the show, whether or not. Because I feel like Tony has all these different paths that he could have taken. And I want to see those like unfold before him. Like, could he have been those guys, one of those dudes who like toured with the Dead, you know? Like, I want to see where he would have gone had he not been forced into that life.
Yeah, I think like and it's also interesting, like, you know, Godfather 2 being a good example of this, of like the prequel that is kind of the almost like you're watching a Rube Goldberg machine, like show you how this thing ended in this place that you now know it as, you know? And I think those, to me, those are my favorite prequels, are the ones that get, you know, where it's going, but the whole journey is pretty unexpected.
Right.
Like, I think that's, if you're doing a prequel, that's what I think you have to pull off, is everyone knows where it's going. So how do you surprise people with how they got there?
Well, if it's a superhero movie, the big climax scene is where they put on the outfit that you know them from.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like shave their beard off.
Yeah.
Like, now he looks like the thing from the comic that I know.
That's why, like, there's this one run of Batman comics called Batman Year One, which is just basically the first year Batman was Batman.
Yeah.
And they do a smart thing, which is that it's not, it doesn't end like that. It starts with him putting on the costume. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a little bit of time between, but it's mostly about, like, how much you fuck up as Batman your first year.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it
does he, like, accidentally kill a bunch of people?
I can't remember. That would be really sick. I don't think so.
Okay.
Batman tends not to do that.
Right. But, I know, but it was his first year. You know,
although Zack Snyder says, "Grow the fuck up." Batman kills people.
Is that what Zack Snyder says?
Yep.
Jeez. It is.
Christ.
Which I loved. I loved.
You got to retell the story about the Flex magazine.
Oh, well, yeah. So Chris Maloney, who I worked with on a show, he's actually on this Harley Quinn show too. He plays Commissioner Gordon. He's amazing. Chris Maloney's on set of Superman, and everybody's crowded around Zack Snyder at Video Village, and so Maloney goes behind to see what everybody's looking at, and Maloney and Zack Snyder's like on his iPad, and he's like swiping on these picture after picture of these like insanely huge bodybuilders, like just like the biggest dudes you've ever seen, like oiled up, and he's like looking through them for some reason, and this then this woman who is like, I think she's a producer on the film or something, but she just goes, "Ugh, that is disgusting," and Zack Snyder goes, "Yeah, disgustingly awesome."
Oh, that's amazing.
Say what you will about Zack Snyder, but
he is who he is.
He has an idea of what he wants to make, and he makes it. Yeah.
I would love to see the Snyder cut of The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Release the Sopranos Snyder cut. Yeah. Isn't it amazing how every time WB's official Twitter page tweets anything, all of the responses are just release the Snyder cut?
I haven't followed that.
You have to see it. Like, just go to any tweet that WB's, just, it'll be just like, "Hey, we're releasing this Harry Potter thing." And just everything below is like, "Release the Snyder cut. Release the Snyder cut." Like thousands.
It's like
just,
69 and people say nice.
Yes, yeah. It's like that.
Nice. So then this episode ends with Tony working out in his basement, which is hilarious, the idea of him exercising, because like I think that's part of their whole dream is to never exercise. But then, of course, he immediately follows it up by making ice cream sundaes and eating the whipped cream out of the canister
and trying to pour it down AJ's neck, which is, as far as I know, the only reference to the title. Down neck?
Oh, yeah.
Any idea what that means?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Not really.
No idea. I was just like, oh, he tried to pour it down his neck. There's probably a reason, and I bet we could research it, but like, why?
Yeah.
You know?
Down neck refers to the ironbound section of Newark, New Jersey, where Tony grew up.
All right.
There you go.
Okay. Well,
that's weird that you made that connection from the whipped cream.
I was just spending the whole time trying to understand why it was called down neck. They didn't mention it at all. There was, I had no idea. Altogether, I would say that is, probably one of the best episodes of The Sopranos this season.
Really?
Personally, yes.
No
way. And I'll tell you why. Because it was, for me, it was Livia's coming out party in terms of like
she's
so fucking funny and so good in this episode. And not only that, even flashback Livia is amazing. I mean, you've got her wanting to stick a fork right in his eye. You've got her mentioning the fact that she would rather smother her kids with a pillow than take them to Reno, which is just fantastic. And also an allusion to something that happens later in the season, but we won't get into it because there's no spoilers on this.
I definitely think it's one of the better written episodes. I don't think it quite made it to the final cut as the episode that it could have been.
So far, it's college in this one to me.
The pilot, though. Pilot's great.
Yeah, pilot's good. Yeah, sure.
College is, I think, the best first season episode, and maybe one of the best episodes all time.
Yeah, for sure. But second best, I'm saying down neck.
All right.
I liked it a lot.
All right.
Yeah. And I think that's it. Justin, thank you so much for
coming
on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Where can we find you on the internet?
My Twitter is @Justin_Halpern.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Does someone have @Justin Halpern?
Yeah, and they only have one tweet up, and the tweet says, "Yay, I have a Twitter page just like my daddy now." Or something like that. Yeah. It's something like that.
I mean, maybe how many years? Yeah, that's the thing. You need to check because you might be able to switch over.
Oh, maybe so now. I'm not sure.
It's a thing. You can if someone doesn't use their page after a while, you can take the name.
Oh.
We did get an email.
Oh, we got a Sopranos email. Yeah.
"Hey, Godfrauders/Podfathers. New email, old listener. My girlfriend and I just finished The Sopranos for the first time last week and thoroughly enjoyed it. Half the reason we finally got around to it was because of Pod Yourself a Gun. The new podcast is great so far. Here are two bumpers I put together for the phone/email segment. Version 2 is just the voicemail. Version 3 is email and voicemail. Blah, 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 blah. Lieb, Audacity is a hell of a drug."
Yes, it is.
Hello?
Hey!
Who's this?
Pod Yourself a Gun.
On the what?
Leave a voicemail.
No.
Google voice number?
415-275-0030.
Yeah, I'll give it a fucking message. Fucking goddamn fucking...
God damn it, Tony!
That's pretty good.
Really well done.
Very well done.
Let's hear the next one.
Hello?
Hey.
Who's this?
Pod Yourself a Gun.
On the what?
Email us if you have any questions. That's frogcast@gmail.com.
No.
Vince, what's the Google voice number?
415-275-0030.
Yeah, I'll give it a fucking message. Fucking goddamn fucking...
That's fantastic.
Damn it, Tony!
That's fantastic.
Very good.
That person is very talented.
You're very, very good at Audacity. I mean, as bumpers, they're quite long. I mean, I think we would have to use the combination voicemail email one because there's no way we're doing that twice.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much for the bumpers, and thank you for listening. And once again, that email is frogcast@gmail.com, which is our other podcast. Vince, what is the Google voice number?
415-275-0030. Did you not hear it in the bumper?
Yeah, they probably did. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening. And until next time,
don't stop believing.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.